I titled the talk today, Transitions, Weathering the Changes in Family Life, or something to that effect. And to a certain extent, I'm going to give you some information that I think is helpful, that it was helpful to me, and I am going to try to allow enough time so that I can have some input from you and some sharing that you would be willing to do. As I said, I'm going to share a little bit about what's happened in my family, both my growing up and as I've raised four kids and stayed married for 27 years. But on the other hand, we've got a wealth of information here, so I hope to be able to move through this so that there is some time for some comments and questions from you. I am not going to be able to give you a do-it-yourself schedule of how to weather all crises. Just don't have that capability. However, I kind of feel that, and I use the term weathering the storms or weathering the crises, because I think just like having some news from the weatherman about what the percentage of chance for rain tomorrow is, helps you be prepared to either take your umbrella, your raincoat, or leave them at home, and know that you're going to have some idea of being prepared for what's going to happen. Within the last 10 to 15 years, there's been a lot of research done on adult stages of development. Gail Sheehy became famous a few years ago for her book Passages. Daniel Levinson has a book called It's in small print, and that means I will show you one of the transition stages I'm in. I have to wear my glasses for fine print. Levinson's book is on the seasons of a man's life. They done a lot of research interviewing in depth people who have been in what they call the midlife decade, ages 35 to 45. And if you're in there, consider yourself right in the middle. I've done a lot of history on it, and have done, since the study was done in 69, the first study was done in 69, have done quite a bit of follow-up. So both Levinson and Sheehy and other writers speak to these transition times as well as the stages. Childhood and adolescence is the pre-17-year-old stage. All of these have kind of wavy ends. When you're 17, on your 17 years, 6 months, and 24 or 23 hours, you don't automatically move from childhood or adolescence into early adult transition. As we talk about how children grow physically, and as you think back to your own growth physically, you know that you got your growth spurt before your next door neighbor, and you're only 1 week difference in age. My kids happened to grow late in life. I was a late bloomer, and so were they. Our oldest was, he was kind of the pioneer, and as he was kind of a little pipsqueak until he was 16, 17. All of his friends had just grown up past him. And one day he called me at the office and said, "Mom, today's the day." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Today when I answered the telephone, they didn't say, 'Is that you, Ricky?' They said, 'Is that you, Dale?'" His voice had dropped, and he was aware because somebody on the telephone had told him that suddenly he was a bass instead of a voice soprano. Okay. As you change, as different people grow physically and mature physically at different ages, some people achieve a physical maturity at 12, some people at 17. So the point at achieving any of these levels, early adulthood or middle adulthood and so forth, also is kind of a wavy line at the beginning and at the end. Some people may move into early adulthood at age 17. You've all known people who've been extremely responsible, ready to take on adult responsibility and so forth. Shortly, they're 18 years old. They're already moving into that. Others of you may have children at home that are 22, going on 23, and they haven't quite hit that level yet. The same is true for this midlife period, the transition between early adulthood and middle adulthood. first people that came in here said it was nice to know they were in their early 40s, and they thought they were, you know, well past, they're well into middle age, and to find they're just kind of on the ends of early adulthood. That's nice. Okay. The same, again, is true for late adulthood transition times. In the studies that they've done, the research they've done, although they can't say, you know, at this hour of this day of this year of your life, you will move from one stage into another, they do have in terms of studies, there is a period in pretty consistently within about a five-year period, people do make that move. Move out of one period into the other. If you think about it, moving from one stage of life into another, as they define it, means a change in understanding of your occupation, your security, your sense of independence, sense of individuality. There are a lot of things that you have to detach in order to reattach to something else. As you look at these different transition periods, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the periods, but more stress the transition periods, there is a sense that you, no matter what stage you're in, might look at, what do you hang on to? If you're in any of these transition periods, or getting close to one, or just came away from one, what do you or did you hang on to? What attachments did you or do you hold on to most closely? What do you reach out toward? What in the next stage of life looks most inviting? What are you aiming for? You might think in terms of how does the next stage that you're moving into lead on to subsequent stages. Interestingly enough, both Levinson and Sheehy in the studies they've done, and others, as I mentioned, are following the people they originally did studies with. And you may or may not know that the post-80-year-old age group is the fastest-growing age group in our country. And so maybe we'll fill these in, and you've come back in a few years, and I'll have something to talk about the post-late adulthood. Maybe this is nearer my God to thee, I'm not sure. But as we get more people that we can do studies about, people who are functioning well or just actually a cross-section of that period, we'll have a closer idea of what that stage of adult development will be. So as I go through this, I want you to think about, what do I hang on to for my current stage? What am I looking forward to in the next stage? And how does this next stage lead on to further ones? One of the transitions, I can read my notes. If I look out here, you are all a big blur. Mm-hmm. If you're all nice and clear, I can't read it. So please bear with me. I'm not a biologist. Taken some zoo in college and so forth. I'm not a biologist. Not done a great deal of study of snakes or crustaceans or lobsters and so forth. But I do know that one of the things that those particular animals do is they shed their outer shell, or they shed their skin. As the new skin is complete, the new shell is complete, the old one sloughs off. And that's another example of the way, as you move through a transition period, you're going through a period when you are getting ready to slough off an old skin. But before you do that, you've prepared your new skin. And the period between getting ready to slough it off and actually slithering out of the old skin is that transition period. For many years, people have done a lot of study of early childhood development. I'm not going to go into that, although I know that it's been comforting for me to pick up a book by Gazelle that says, you know, when I had a 17-month-old, to read that the 18-month-old child often likes to do things in reverse. You will actually often find the child walking backwards. And I looked up to see my 17-month-old moving backwards. There was great comfort in knowing that he was not unusual, that this was not a sign of retardation, of mental or physical slowness, that this was really kind of right on track. Of course, everybody likes to feel their child is exceptional and wonderful and so forth, but there's also great comfort in knowing that they're developing at a pace that they're expected to develop. Okay. In the pre-adulthood period, that's even before your early adult transitions, people usually live with their family or an equivalent social unit. They have provided for them, for the most part, in our society, protection, socialization, and support of their growth. With adequate development, we can be reasonably self-sufficient members of society as we enter adulthood. In this pre-adulthood period, we're relatively dependent and vulnerable, though decreasingly so. And then as we move into this early adult transition period, you know, 17 to 22, that, and for some of you whose children perhaps may be a little precocious, a little earlier, it's the period where, please, I'm trying to run all my own life, becomes their theme as you are trying to continue the normal, what you consider to be a normal communication, and continuing in a caring relationship within the family. This was so long that I'm really trying to cut it down to give you more time to talk. In this early adult transition time, the boy is also part man, the girl is also part woman, and they're starting to detach from the adolescent stage and their dependency and moving into making choices, important choices, not just what color sweater am I going to buy or what color ice cream am I going to have when I go down to the snack shop, but choices about vocation, choices about college, choices about some goals in their life. It used to be, I know when I was growing up, people would say, what do you want to be? And I was kind of expected, never quite lived up to all these people's expectations, but expected to have an idea of what I was going to do out there 30 years. I think there's a real sense today that people don't make the decisions about what they're going to do out there 30 years from now, unless it's been something that, you know, some way in which they're extremely dedicated. I'm a college counselor when I'm at home, not at a Holden Village, and I find most of the kids I work with really don't know what they want to do out there a few years from now. There's a sense in which they want to try their wings, to find out what their strengths are, find out what kind of choices they really do have. And so the boy man, the girl woman, is starting to detach from the dependency at home and making choices that are real choices, establishing their beginning membership in adult community. You think about it, up to here is kind of like 1/4 of the expected lifespan, their life. But we've got 3/4 of our lives, expected or potential lifespan, that we have not really dealt with in this way before. The early adult period, early adulthood, is a very dramatic period. It goes from about 17 or 18 on up to 43 to 45. For men, it's the peak years of biological functioning. Usually those are from like 20 to 40. At 20, men are considered to be at their height of bodily vigor, getting ready to take their place in the world of adults. They've got their full height. Some take longer than the others, but a maximum level of strength, maximum level of sexual capability, cardiac and respiratory capacities are full. Also peak in intelligence and in memory, abstract reasoning, able to learn new skills to solve well-defined problems. Maybe somewhat comforting to those of you who are past the ages of 20 to 30 to know that relatively recent research has demonstrated that people do not diminish greatly in their intellectual capacities over the years. You know, you If, you know, they used to say that, you know, you hit your peak around 20 and then from there on it was downhill all the way. Let me assure you that it really isn't, that you, it's just very, very slight changes, and that has often to do with learning new skills, partly because we often program ourselves not to learn new skills. As they look at diagrams, or they make diagrams or charts of learning capacities, it shows it falls off just before death. And they often attribute that to illnesses that occur that perhaps will lead to death itself. But if you were smart when you're 20, you're probably still smart when you're 40, 60, 80, whatever. So still have good intellectual capacities. The biological, physical capacities stay relatively stable up until 40. And although there are cosmetic changes, some of you may have noticed that the muscles of the stomach do not hold in the guts as well as they used to. Some of you may have noticed that your hair is thinning a bit on top. Your face perhaps is not as taut. It has a few wrinkles. They say if you've never done this in the mirror to see how would I look with a facelift, you probably don't need one. But those cosmetic kinds of changes in your body really, from the ages of 20 to 45 and so forth, really do not denote a real change in your actual physical or health capacity. During this period of early adulthood, the young adult forms preliminary adult identity, major choices we mentioned in terms of occupation, marriage, often setting up changes in or a new lifestyle, residence, begetting and raising children, in a sense kind of defining a place in society. And that is, in a sense, what, again, studies have shown, looking at the empirical evidence, of what happens during that period. That's not necessarily what ought to happen, but that is what has traditionally happened in American society during that period. He or she begins to leave home physically and increasingly leaves home emotionally, so that they often don't go home so much for emotional support as because it's kind of nice to see the folks again. Don't have to go home to do the laundry anymore or to get bailed out financially or get your head patted because you've done a good job, but go home increasingly out of a sense of caring for the parents rather than being cared for by the parents. Early adulthood is a time of struggling to establish a place in society, and while that can be very satisfying, it is also very stressful. Our society is extremely competitive out there in the big world, and that is extremely stressful. Obviously, you all know that there are many, many courses on stress management, using your stress effectively. Good stress, bad stress, but using the stress in the best way possible. In the 20s, people are essentially paying their dues, making their essential contributions to the survival of the species, you know, begetting, raising children, and so forth. With luck, well, let's put it, a lot of it has to do with living up to the expectations they have been led to believe society expects of them at that time. With luck, they're also finding things that they enjoy doing, like doing, it's good for them, as well as meeting the needs of society. There is certainly a strong achievement focus at that point. People moving from here to here, move from novice adults, novice lovers, husbands, wives, parents, so forth, into, by the time they hit 40, in the more senior position where they are often able, whether you ask them for it or not, give you advice on how you should do things if you're younger. By the time people reach their 40s, the children have started their families in the 20s. The children are at or near adolescence, or their nest is emptying. The husband and wife together are experience a lot of strong personal and losses and stresses. People, as I mentioned, are often taking on more responsibility for their parents instead of being the ones that their parents have felt responsibility for. They become a senior to the younger generation. Within the last 15 years, things, the world has changed a lot. The world in terms of roles for women have changed a lot. 25 years ago, the period of the 20s was a time when most women were married, stayed home, raised children, and that was kind of the expectation. Women were more responsive, let's put it that way. Men were expected to be the initiators, to take the initiative, go out, new jobs, new occupations, initiate by moving out into the world, the aggressor, the competitor, certainly the breadwinner. Whoops, there's been a change. And increasingly, we're finding, well, you've probably experienced it yourself. Many of you women, at age 35 to 40, finding your children had achieved an age where they were in school full time, said, hey, I don't want to stay home and bake bread all the time. I've got other talents. I'm a good organizer. I'm really good working with people. I'd like to experiment a little bit more with moving out into that world. Women are going back to school at an increasing rate. At Portland State, I think the average age of a student right now is like 29. When I went to college, if you didn't go to college right out of high school, you'll never get through. I mean, you'll never go back. And so parents were always pushing to get their kids right into college. Now there are so many options, so many people going in to college, staying for a while, saying, this still isn't what I want to do, leaving for a while, coming back, either coming back to finish a bachelor's or a master's degree. Last year at the age of 52, I finally got my master's. Actually, I've been working on that for 30 years, but it finally came through. I got enough hours in a short enough period of time to get through. Women are going back to school in increasing numbers to get skills, knowledge, to help them move into the outside world, outside of the home and family. They are moving into an initiating role. Men are, it's transition stage for men too, except for them they're having a little bit more opportunity to be in the responsive role than they had, as I mentioned, when I was married 27 years ago. Two young football coaches at the school that I teach in, both super macho looking guys, one 6'4" and broad and absolute doll. Married, has two little girls. His wife is an early childhood specialist and teaches. They had a girl sick last year. One of their daughters was sick. The first week, the wife stayed home to take care of the baby and left her work. The second week, our football coach stayed home to take care of the baby while she was getting better. I didn't know who was going to flip for the third week. Jim says, and that's the name of the coach, said, when I grew up, that would never have been an option. But now it seems like the most logical thing to do. Our other football coach, even more macho, 2 years at West Point before he finished another college, before he came to us, is big, thick beard and so forth, and intensely competitive in lots of ways. He takes care of his two daughters as much as his wife does. His wife is a nurse. Part of it, we teach in a Lutheran high school. We don't make a heck of a lot of money. They need two incomes to keep going. But also because it seems right to them. They see that, full-time having Ann take care of my kids, our kids, I never get to really know them. And so they share the housekeeping, the child-rearing, as well as moving out into the world. So it is a different world. There is a strong transition. It's difficult for men and women to know exactly what they're supposed to do. And that's why communication is increasingly important. Talking together, whether you're in your 20s and are just getting to know somebody, or whether you're in your 40s and you've been married for 17 years Of course, you know everything about the other person. Increasing need for communication to keep those in your life, to keep yourself in the life of those people that you think are really important. Okay. Period in here. As I look around the room, I don't see any clear majority. Period from 40 to 45 is a period when you're beginning, it's kind of like late August. You know that, you know, it's still plenty warm outside, but it's beginning to smell a little bit like fall. All right. Beginning to be aware of some changes. Crucial developmental change, no marked points, you know, not like puberty where the physiological changes are so clear you know you've moved from childhood at least into adolescence. No, there's nothing quite so clear. Some people say, you know, when you hit 40, you need glasses to read telephone books and maps, but I keep fighting it because obviously I'm past 40. But they really have not found any physiological change or marked event that marks that point. It's more the way that people's lives are lived, that they've studied and are have documented. Biological and psychological. Excuse me. Need a little bit more lubrication. Biological and psychologically, the body and the mental processes are certainly fully ample for a full, active life. Still a lot of youthful drives, sexually, a lot of sense of moral indignation, of capacity for anger, but not, as often happens in the 20s, early adulthood, not being tyrannized by a lot of those drives. Moving into this period, into that transition period and into middle adulthood, there is some real excitement. Let me tell you, for those people who are looking forward to it with fear and trembling, there are lots of neat possibilities then. You're still in pretty good physical shape, as I said, but you got a potential for other kinds of enrichment in life. For men, there is often a chance to do some things that women have traditionally done, which is kind of look at self-understanding, understand yourself, being in touch with some feelings, some fairly close communication with not only the women in your life, but also with men friends. Moving beyond the sports, the cars, and the locker room talk, men moving into the 40 to 45 and on period find that they can often share what's really going on for them with another man without a sense of losing the competitive edge or giving up something. It is it's a potential. Certainly it's not a generic thing that happens to all people, but there's much more potential for it in that period than there is in the period before. In that particular period of life, there's more chance to be a facilitative parent instead of a controlling parent. Instead of telling your kids what they ought to do, there's more an opportunity to be the person who helps them discover their own power. Helps them to find out who they are, and there's often a camaraderie that can be developed both with men and their daughters, men and their sons, women and their sons, and depending upon the age of their daughters, with their daughters also. How to begin to respect, I guess it's a point at which you can begin to respect their emerging adulthood and their abilities without having to tell them, well, now, if you want to do it a better way, do it my way. You remember your intellectual capacities are the same as theirs, perhaps, but they have lived in a different world. They are aware of a lot more information, a lot of things that you perhaps are not, no matter how many years you had college. I just found out that when I was in college, I learned that there were 24 chromosomes in the human genetic system. And they have since discovered, since I got out of college without telling me, that there are only 23. The information that kids have today, that the young adults have today, is different. They don't have to build on all the stuff we got. I keep saying we, for those of you who are my age, but some of you are obviously different ages, but my kids don't have to build on all the stuff I learned. They have learned that as a base and have moved on from there. So they know a lot of other things that I don't. And it's exciting. It's exciting as a parent to be able to trust their power, to be able to trust their knowledge. And I, moving into this period, I can do that. Or other people who are moving in there can begin to see themselves as a facilitating parent, helping them to discover their own power rather than as a controller. It's a chance to be perhaps a more compassionate teacher of young adults, authority in that sense, than earlier. There's almost a lack of rancor. Going into that period, your identity is not tied up in what you know and how much advice people take from you. It's kind of there if you want it, if you ask for it. Maybe you might use it in some kind of facilitative way, but it's not something that I've got to make you know because I just found it out. There are changes physiologically, obviously. As we take better care of our bodies, as we're jogging and running and working out, and giving Monodolus lots of money every year, we are taking better care of our physical capabilities and losing some of our capabilities at a slower rate than 20 years ago. But there is still a sense by the time you move up, you're in this midlife transition period, you're going to be losing some strength. You're going to be, people in that age usually move occupationally into less strenuous labor, things that require less physically from them, whether it's precision types of work or strenuous labor. It's going to be interesting to see what Pete Rose does as player manager coming in here. He's certainly pushing this point a lot. It will be interesting to note at which point he decides that it is better not to be player manager and just to be manager alone. Pete's got so much ego involved and self-identity involved in being the player. It's going to be a neat process to watch. Hopefully he can make the change that his identity will not be so much tied up in with his playing ability as his strategy, as his ability to encourage and to facilitate, since I've used that word before, facilitate the younger players. Because obviously his legs aren't what they used to be 20 years ago. It'll be interesting to watch. That's just to show you that I do read the sports page. Okay. The professional sports person is a good example of someone who has to give up some of their, in this period here, some of their identity because physically they can't cut the mustard, usually, unless you're a professional place kicker and you keep it a lot longer. But the person who gives up that professional sports career earlier in the 30s usually has, 10 years or so in which to make new choices, prepare for new selections, new opportunities, other things to do when they get past 45. They have an easier time than if they wait till their early 40s or wherever Pete is these days before they make that kind of a choice. It's a little sense like when you're in the early adulthood, you have some qualities. You produce qualities of strength, quickness, endurance, and output. By the time you move into the middle adulthood, you've got other qualities that are ripening. Wisdom, hopefully, judiciousness, sense of magnanimity. My goodness, you know, you don't have to accumulate anymore. That seemed to be a strong thrust in the 20s and 30s. By the time you move into the 30s, you don't need to accumulate anymore. If you have that need, you might look at it a little bit and say, what am I getting out of this? Certain sense of unsentimental compassion. Certainly a breadth of perspective. Experience does count for something. In another real sense, a sense of tragedy, that life really isn't fair. You get beyond, you know, if you've traveled at all, if you've looked beyond the neat suburbs, the homes that most of us have come from, the world that most of us have known, if you look beyond that at all, you get off the freeways, get over into some of the third world nations, you know that there's a whole world that's tragic, and there's a sense in which that tragedy also touches us, that we too are mortal. That there is a sense of death out there that we're all going to have to face. You know, you try telling somebody that in their 20s, their head can say yes. They really don't have it in their guts, in their heart, unless, of course, they've lost somebody very, very close to them. Start moving into your 40s, and you know that's true. You begin to feel some loss of youthful vitality. Experience some sense of your own mortality, as I mentioned, your own limitations. For a lot of people, those who were the initiators in their 20s and have set up those goals out there, where they're going to go and what they're going to do and how they're going to change this company, how they're going to change the world, they find out by the time they're in their 40s, you know, realistically, looking at that broad perspective, I'm not going to make that. And then there's some readjustment, or need for some readjustment. And just as with any kind of loss, the loss of a dream is just as real as the loss of a loved one. There's a mourning period that goes through with it. How do you give up that loss? How do you mourn for the fact that you are never going to be the president of the company? You are never going to make your company nationwide. You are never going to save all the people in a given place. You're never going to do that. Or maybe your goals were a lot lower. Maybe someday you were going to swim the English Channel. Or you were going to win something at the Olympics, or at least get to the pre-Olympic trials. You come to the point where you say, hey, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to give up that dream. What are the dreams? So the loss of the possibility of fulfilling all of those goals is something that needs a period of mourning, and that usually comes into this period. Some of that loss of a dream, giving up of a dream, can be a quiet time. As I mentioned, it's often a time where men who've not done it before start trying to understand themselves. What makes them run? What makes them tick? What's important to them in a real sense? Now, if they were to die tomorrow, if they had 30 days to live, what would they really want to do with their life? Who would they want to see? Often people at that point will contact people that were important to them 25 years before. And just kind of a sense of, I just kind of wanted to get in touch. I had a telephone call from an old friend about 7 years ago, and I thought, my gosh, is he dying of cancer or something like that? But no, it was just a sense of wanting to get in touch with somebody who had been important at an earlier point and kind of touch base. Many people will find that. Many people moving into the 40s will find that they want to, you know, do a family history. They want to find out from grandpa or great-grandma before they go what their family's been like. There's a sense of belonging to a multi-generation family, and that it's important. They want to treasure some of those things that were grandma's, that, you know, they might have burned or scarred or done something to when they were in their 20s, but by the time they get into the 40s, that has some more value to them. Okay. If during this period, this turbulence, this reevaluation, this reassessment time and so forth is relatively mild, that's one thing. If it's really turbulent, If there's a lot of upheaval, it's what we call midlife crisis. And certainly there have been lots of books that have dealt with that, that are dealing with that. Lots of talks, you listen to late night talk shows. Lots of things about midlife crises. And you've all known people, perhaps you yourself have been going through some kind of a crisis. In terms of marriage, in terms of work, in terms of relationship, in terms of occupation, in terms of residence, all kinds of reevaluations. How to make that the most productive time, a more productive time and not a negative time. How not to throw out the baby with the bathwater. It's part of the communication necessity and part of the challenge of that period. Kind of like the tasks of this midlife transition point are ending the early childhood, the early adulthood period of life and reappraisal of that time. Taking steps toward detaching from the negative in that structure, and testing new choices. Another task is dealing with the polarities in life. Sources of deep division, the question of mortality. What does this mean to a Christian? It's a certain sense where there's much more a feeling quality of wanting to deal with some spiritual questions at that point than during the 20s and 30s. I mentioned the knowledge and the realization that not only people out there, but myself, capable of destructiveness, that I have been destructive in other people's lives and some ways they have been destructive in mine. And starting to deal with that as part of life, not something we can shovel under the rug and say it doesn't exist. One of the tasks is building up a sense of the interior part. Who are you, really? You know, the identity crisis. It's not only when you're in your 20s. There's a certain identity crisis that comes with the 40s, and it's a little bit different. And as I said, there's some positives. There's enjoying living more, rather than just enjoying attaining a goal. There are opportunities, there are risks. It's always important in re-evaluation, reassessment, at that point to understand the value, the need for working within the milieu you're in, working with the people that are important to you, that are close to you. To hear one another, to be able to articulate as much as possible what's going on, and to really listen to the other person as to what they're saying without judging the words, the thoughts, and the feelings. It can be a very exciting time. It can be stressful. It certainly is a stressful time. Emptying nests for those people who've been full-time mothers, or even half-time mothers, as the kids take off, there's a great sense of being able to facilitate them as a parent, but there's also a sense of it's not as noisy around home anymore. My last one graduated from high school in June, and one of the other students, a sophomore girl, came up to me after she had to get something in my classroom after graduation. She said, "You know, my mother was watching you at graduation." She said she couldn't understand how you could be so dry-eyed when Lori was graduating. You didn't cry at all. And I said, "Well, it really never occurred to me to cry." when she went off to first grade and she was the last one out of the house, I was excited to watch her go down to that school bus. I kept thinking of all the things that she had ahead of her, all the adventures. And I knew there was going to be some pain involved with some of those adventures. But essentially, there were so many opportunities for her. And I feel the same way about her now. She's moving on to college. This particular girl said her mother said that evening that when she graduated, her mother knew that she was going to cry buckets. There's going to be a sense of how do you detach for that mother? How is she going to detach from her role of motherhood as being what made her important to find something else? be better if she started earlier to move through that transition until, rather than at the point where the girl graduates from high school. This period up here is still being studied. I've got some information that talks about this is the period where you move out of center stage. A lot of people, especially for men, and in this period now, most of what we're studying in terms of the outside world has to do with men. Most of the women in this period that we're talking like 80%, most of the women have been full-time housewives and so forth. But for the men, certainly a sense with retirement comes moving out of center stage, giving up that position of strokes to somebody younger. It also means reducing the heavy responsibilities and stresses that go with that, of trying to meet the goals, trying to please the boss, or if you are the boss, trying to stay 10 steps ahead of the people who are under you. There's certainly less recognition, less power, but there is facilitative power. Hey, by the time you get from here on, moving on up, there's a sense of using the knowledge, the power that you have, not to overpower, not even to assert, but to be facilitative in helping other people discover their power, younger people discover their power, younger people within a company, younger people within a family, and so forth. In a very serious, playful way. You know, work and play, once you're retired, work and play kind of come together. What is it that you really enjoy doing and where you can devote yourself to that project? I had a history professor in college who was one of my favorites, and he came back to a class reunion a few years ago, and he's now retired, and he's finally doing some studies of looking at the immigration tables of the Norwegian Americans into America 1840 to 1860. He said that's the kind of study you can do when you're a graduate student or when you're retired, because obviously it's too time consuming when you're trying to earn a living besides. So he has found a way to work at what he would love to have played at for a long time. He's put those things together. And he can devote himself, all of his energies to doing that. So you see a book out by Carlton Qualley, that he did after he retired. In the late adult period, less emphasis on personal recognition, personal reward. We all need to be recognized, but less on the sense of personal reward, what you're going to get out of it. But a sense of greater emphasis on utilizing your resources, your inner resources, for a greater good. Again, if in the 40s you stopped accumulating, in the 60s you start giving things away. So, although when kids start coming back, I find that I keep giving things away. Don't you need this chair? Yes, Mom, wouldn't you like to throw in the table too? Okay. This period on, there's potential for lots of good works, not just in terms of doing good, but some authors, painters, philosophers have done some of their best work in the post-60s, 65 ages. Picasso, Golda Meir, Grandma Moses, Tolstoy, Michelangelo, all kinds of people. I guess what I'm saying is, you don't suddenly fold up your tent and slip silently away when you get to that point. There's still plenty of living out there. And then the sense of peacemaking. We deal a lot with how do we live for peace in this village? How do we promote peace? You get up to this point, some people are there earlier, but certainly moving into that period, a greater percentage of people can look at their own flaws, realize their own need for forgiveness, for forgiving themselves, asking for forgiveness from others, certainly in touch with what it means to be forgiven by God, and still able to fight with conviction but less rancor for peace. That broader perspective, fewer illusions, helps them to see that there are some ways that we can move for peace among many people. Hopefully, many, many people. Okay, I didn't give you much time. But any comments, any questions? I'll be glad to try to field them. Perhaps you have some way in which some of this has fit into your life. You can see where it has had there are some examples for you in your life. Yes?
Well, you were talking about this age transition and so forth and how to treat your children. And we had an experience about a month ago. Our daughter, she's grown, has children. And their house burned down. They lost everything, their house and their personal belongings. And we found it was hard for us to treat them like grown adults. It was like going back to the baby stage to help them out again. Mm-hmm. And we had to realize that they were 30, 33 years old, and they were mature. And how far do you go with those? Because we found out that if you tried to help them too much, they resented. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we just let them, and it turned out that they asked us questions or when they needed our help, and also other people helped them so much they almost resented it, thought it was charity. And so we tried to help them by telling people, well, they will let you know. And it worked out that way that they felt a little stronger by asking people themselves rather than people just...
Yeah, a sense of which you really listen to them.
That's right.
Rather than say, I know what's best for you and I'm going to give you this. Yeah. Thank you.
There's another book out that I found very good for transitions by William Bridges. Goes through the different phases of a transition, and I found it helpful I'm not crazy, because I can relate to a lot of what you said.
That's an excellent book, and I didn't have it with me. I would have used it. So. Yeah, it's a very good book, very clearly written. Yeah, I like it.
William Bridges.
Yeah.
Have these transitions changed? Like, it seems like my kids are so much younger at their ages than we were, if you know what I mean. Like, at 16, I was out of high school, in college, and really away from home. My 16-year-old daughter decided to move to live with her father, and I just about died because she's only a sophomore in high school. She's just a baby. How could she possibly do? And, I was essentially adult at that age, and I walked away from my family without a backward glance, and they didn't cry either. And then my son, at 22, just decided to enter college. He's been living on his own. And his father, at 22, was married and a father, and going to become a father. So it seems like they're so much younger.
So much of it depends upon the individual. And that's why these periods are marked off by, 5 or 6 year periods. Because certainly my husband could relate to you in terms of taking on adult responsibilities at a younger level than our sons have taken on adult mm-hmm. responsibilities. So much of it has to do
but
with the individual.
No statistical
no.
Kind of
well, part of it is they haven't.
We went to college at 16 or 17.
Part of it is they didn't do much study of adult changes, adult levels or periods of development. It was all, and it's only within the last 50 years they've done much in terms of early childhood sort of stages of development. But it's only recently they've been focusing, actually looking at what's there with deep interviews and so forth. And that's when, some of this may change as they do follow-up studies and they do more current studies. They may see a trend. But with what we have now, this is what they're showing. So, back there.
I just wanted to comment on that, but I think the fact that young people are marrying a little later makes for a very significant difference, because it's probably the first major responsible decision of their lives. It's one of the more major mm-hmm. ones of their whole life. So by putting that off several years, I think it allows them to be the youngster as a child a bit longer and defer some of the early adulthood.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think that young people today have a whole different world that they're living in. They're learning so much more about themselves in the earlier age, and they're a lot of choice.
It's interesting you make that comment, and Susan is saying just exactly the opposite.
I don't know if you told me emotional.
I see the sense in which they have so many more choices than we do. Kids at 14 and 15 making the choice whether or not to go to school. We didn't have a choice whether or not to go to school. We went to school, you know. And all kinds of, all the choices of the sexual freedom, the drugs that didn't exist. And I see that sense. But another sense in which they're younger.
There's another sense in which we have so many choices. Kids have so many choices. Young people, even adults, have so many choices today. That weren't choices before because you were into a role. I mean, and you just, your role told you what you had to do. Now you have to negotiate everything. You know, I'm talking about the football coaches at school. You know, they and their wives have got to do a lot of conversation to make the decisions they make. Whereas, you know, 30 years ago, this is the way it was because he was the man and she was the wife. So
we're both.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other comments? Yes.
I just want to tell you that I really appreciate this because,
dinner. Fast and we'll all get to eat.
Because I'm in a midlife transition, just having quit my job, I'm moving, taking a sabbatical from parenthood, and I felt like I'm the only one. So it's really nice to know that that's happened to someone else, and that they reassess their life.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.